Music is potent stuff. We can get addicted to songs that we love, or we can hate a certain song so much it makes us physically ill. And sometimes songs are like time machines for memories. All it can take is a few bars and we're back in high school again, for better or worse. Well, this hour we dig around in the emotional weight of the music we love and hate, and here's some of your song memories too. I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm glad to be with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour is Stephen Thompson. He's an editor and reviewer for NPR Music, where he curates Song of the Day, contributes to All Songs Considered, and co-created the Tiny Desk Concert Series. And Stephen Thompson, it's great to have you here.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, to get at this, why do you think we have such strong reactions to music?
Well, music kind of comes through us entirely through, I think it comes through, comes to us entirely through one sense, which is just hearing. It doesn't kind of get wound up in a lot of other sensations that can be distracting. And so it has a way, I think, of striking directly through kind of to our subconscious in a way, and sort of lodging itself in our memories in ways that I think other impulses don't.
And I know that, you know, I've heard that sense of smell is supposed to be the
sure.
sense that's most hooked into memory. But I find that songs are pretty much just like that. There are some songs that I can't stand to listen to now because it just brings too much back. Do you have that too?
Oh, absolutely. And it can be any number of things. It can be a song that reminds you of a bad moment in a relationship or the death of a loved one. Or, you know, there are songs that just for whatever reason flat out annoy you, whether it's through sheer repetition or songs sometimes have a way of kind of pinging your nerves at really bad times. you know, like you said, they're like you said it well, it's powerful stuff.
Well, your whole job, I guess, pretty much is getting to completely immerse yourself in music and songs. Do you still get that knee-jerk primal reaction to music, or have you gotten a little bit immune?
I mean, I'm sure I've gotten a little bit desensitized to it to an extent. You know, because I'm constantly listening to new music, because I'm always having to filter in things I haven't heard before, I don't necessarily have quite as much of the fatigue that people feel towards specific songs. You know, that somebody who's heard Gangnam Style by Psy, you know, 600,000 times is going to have a different reaction to it than I will, having heard it maybe only 400,000 times. So I don't quite have as much of the, oh, I'm so sick of that song. But at the same time, I still, you know, unpacking a new batch of music is still Christmas morning to me.
Nice.
I still love it. It still animates me and still excites me. And that's why I still do this.
Well, what songs do you have the biggest reactions to?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I was sort of asked, like, what is your least favorite song of all time? We have this discussion around the office every now and then. What song do you hate more than any other? And I realized as I was listing them that most of them were by Meatloaf. And I know people who love Meatloaf, and I particularly know a lot of people who love the song Paradise by the Dashboard Light, which I can't stand. It's like 9 hours long, and it thinks it's so incredibly clever. And so, for whatever reason, his kind of bellowing sound just and I like Rocky Horror. I mean, I like some of the stuff that he's done, but I was in the grocery store a few months ago and he had a song like 6 or 7 years ago called Cry Over Me, and I had to leave the store. I had to get up. I had to like put my cart aside and like step out and like give myself a timeout in the car until the song was over.
Did you go back in?
I did go back in. I gave myself about 5 minutes because it's just him yelling, cry over me, cry. Oh, God, I can't stand it.
I'm sorry to do this to you, Stephen.
Yes.
But I'm going to play some.
Bless your heart. Ron.
Don't hang up on us. Here it is.
Every generation.
That's not the one. That's a different one.
No, I have different reactions to this.
Yeah, I know. I do, too. Let's see if we can find that one. It should be track 10 or song number 10. Well, we will look for that one.
Oh, you know,
maybe you've gotten a reprieve.
Maybe I know people in your office who might have hidden it from you. I'm from Wisconsin, you know.
I would sing some for you, but I don't know it. But
it would entail a lot of yelling.
Yeah, you've got a visceral Meatloaf reaction thing going on there.
I do.
Well, for me, I find... Oh, good news, Stephen. We have it. Let's try it again.
dig it.
So that's the one, huh?
I think it's when it builds and it builds and it builds and it's the same chorus and it's just this incredibly like nursery rhyme level like cry over me, lie over me. Oh, just it makes me crazy. It's such a stupid
That's
song.
So anyway. Funny because I did not have that reaction. I thought it was a
Well, you played like 4 seconds of it. Not that I want you to play more, but it goes on.
I guess I'll expose myself to it all weekend and see if I get your response.
You do that. You get back to me.
You know, for me, well, I have two things that I think that flip my triggers for songs. And one is, you know, that they, for me, they really are. I studied music in college. And so I do have these really over-the-top reactions to music still. And so I'm kind of careful with it, kind of almost like a drug. But so they get really emotional for me. And there's one that I can't stand because it reminds me of a humiliating romantic moment where I fell in love. Well, you know, whatever. I was 12 with this kid up north on vacation, and he finally had to write me a letter that said he liked me like a sister. Ooh. And I know that's brutal, isn't it? And there was a song for some reason that we kept hearing when we were up there, and it's called "Every Time You Go Away" by Paul Young. Do you know that one?
I like that song. I have positive connections to that song.
Do you? What are your positive connections? Maybe they can override my negative connections.
I don't necessarily have like that's the song I fell in love to because I think you and I are about the same age. But I just felt like it was one of the good songs on the radio. But you know,
it's not a bad song. And here it is. Okay, there it is. I am such a loser, Stephen, when I hear that song.
It's thick with the mid-1980s, that song. But I think it's a lovely melody. That song has always appealed to me. But I have not ever had my heart ripped in half to that song.
What song have you had your heart ripped in half to?
Oh, that's a different show.
Come on, I told you mine. You can toss us a bone.
Oh, man. You know, well, we don't have any of these songs lined up.
We can. But
around the same time, because I think you and I are roughly in the same ballpark.
I think so, yeah.
In terms of when we were having our hearts ripped in half for the first time. I did a paper. I grew up in Iola, Wisconsin, and I did a paper route delivering the Appleton Post Crescent, and I would ride around on my bicycle with my Walkman, and every day for months and months and months, I would listen to this terrible, I loved it, but it's this terrible album by the band Chicago.
Uh-huh.
Chicago 18. So it's after Peter Cetera has left Chicago. And it's, if you look in reviews, in books of reviews, it's always like Chicago 18, 1/2 star. But I was like 14 and just listened to it over and over again. And like the cool, like metal kids would always be like, oh, what are you listening to? And I don't, you know, Scorpions, you know, Dio. Uh-huh. It was always Chicago 18. But anyway, one of my first heartbreaks was soundtracked to the album Chicago 18. And it's as bad as having your heart broken is, having your heart broken and listening to incredibly lame music does not make it better.
Well, see, and that brings me to one of my other pet peeves about music, and maybe you share this as a music guy, is that songs are never retired. You know, they never just die and go away, and that's it. You're kind of free of them. They come back, and sometimes, you know, I'll be at the drugstore for a kid ibuprofen run at 1 in the morning, and there is that song that I never wanted to hear again in my life, but there I am listening to it.
Yeah, music is just added to this gigantic mosaic. And yeah, I mean, the grocery store that plays Meatloaf as often as it does will often just like, here's like a fourth tier Billy Ocean song from 1989.
Right.
It's Love Zone. Why am I hearing Love Zone by Billy Ocean?
I mean, I think that's a legitimate question. Why are we hearing Love Zone? Or for me, Horse with No Name is another equivalent. I could go on and on. So those are sort of the negative ones. What about positive ones?
So you know, I'm constantly, you know, every year I put together like a year-end best of collection, you know, like 2 CDs of my favorite songs. And then I never kind of put away my favorite songs. So it's when I'm actually surprised in the wild by a song that I love, it's usually something older, and it's usually something that springs up out of my childhood or some random experience, or maybe a movie I loved and I heard the song and completely forgot about it. So for me, I love it when I'm surprised by a glowing feeling toward a song from my past. And the one that popped into my head was, and I know some people hate this song. Maybe some people who love Paradise by the Dashboard Light hate this song. But I love the song Walking on Sunshine by Katrina and the Waves.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's hard. I don't know how you can really hate that song. It's so happy.
I think that's it for some people. But every year I take my daughter, whose birthday is today, by the way. Happy birthday, Grace. She's 9.
Oh, happy birthday.
Oh, my baby. She's halfway to adulthood. And every year I take her to this daddy-daughter dance. And a few years ago, the song Walking on Sunshine came up. Because, of course, like, dances still are largely music of the 80s, even for kids, probably because they're programmed by the kids' parents.
I also thought the 80s were back in again musically.
The 80s are kind of always in somewhere musically. I mean, you know that Gautier song, Somebody That I Used to Know? That whole album is like the greatest hits of the 80s that never actually came out in the 80s.
Wow, that's an interesting take on it.
And I mean, I like that record, but it's tapping into a lot of what people like about 80s music. Anyway, Walking on Sunshine comes up and I'm dancing with my daughter. She's probably, at this point, she's probably 6. And we're just jumping around, and that song, just in that moment, part of it, I'm dancing with my sweet little girl. I'm having a great time. But it just absolutely exploded my heart. And I'm like, I love this song more than all the other songs.
I love that story. Let's listen to it.
It builds and it builds.
Oh. Well, it's just like the Meatloaf song, though, right? But in a better way. That is what you said about Meatloaf, not you.
Well, the thing is, if you like a song and it builds and builds, it keeps your heart grows
right.
3 sizes instead of shrinking.
Right, I get you. That's true. Well, let's go to our first caller now. We have Joan on the line from Milwaukee. Hi, Joan.
Hello. And I'm going back to the 30s. And I was known as Joanne back then. Today, Joan or Chris. But this comes from WHA. When I went to a country grade school, we had Professor Gordon and James Schwabach on WHA radio. Those were the only music and art programs we had. And when I hear the Skater's Waltz from that program, when I hear it anywhere, I see myself back as 6 years old, grabbing my tampon skates and racing down to Pickard's Pond, where we would skate on the stubbled corn shocks. We'd hear the old one-room school bell ring, and we would take the skates off and race back. But that music today brings back all of the beautiful memories of a rural school and a rural countryside in outside of the Dells.
Oh, that's a beautiful story. And be prepared to feel those memories again. Because, surprise, we actually have a little bit that we can play for you. Is that it, Joan?
Smooth o'er the ice, fading along.
Yep, that's it. All right. Joan, thank you so much for sharing that story with us. I love that. That's a beautiful one to have. And it doesn't have any words. You know, you just have that. I can understand where if you've just got a classical piece without the lyrics, you can put whatever you want on it. In this case, it was your beautiful ice skating story. So thank you for that.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Stephen.
I was just going to say part of what was so beautiful about that was it sounded like a movie score. And so she had painted this beautiful picture with words, and then you suddenly have the music to go with it. It created this movie scene in my mind. I just loved that.
Yeah, that was a nice cinematic moment. I love Joan singing along, too. We're talking this hour with Stephen Thompson, an editor and reviewer for NPR Music, where he curates the song of the day, contributes to All Songs Considered, and co-created the Tiny Desk Concert Series. And we want to hear from you this hour about the songs that really flip your emotional switch. Maybe they're these memory time machines like we've been talking about. Maybe for some reason they just get under your skin, for better or worse. We want to hear about the songs and have that powerful emotional impact and what you've made of them in your life. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And you can also shoot us an email to talk@wpr.org or chime in on our Facebook page at The Veronica Rickard Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert back with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. As we talk songs this hour and why music has such a powerful, potent effect on us, we're sharing memories and stories about these songs that do kind of, you know, kick us in the pants every time we hear them. Either sometimes it's a beautiful thing, like Stephen's memory of Walking on Sunshine. Sometimes it's not such a good thing. But music is powerful, and we're hearing those stories this hour. And Stephen Thompson, our guest, he is an editor and reviewer for NPR Music, where he curates Song of the Day and contributes to All Songs Considered. And we'll take another phone call now. We've got Ian joining us from Elkhorn. Hi, Ian.
Hi. So the song that annoys me more than anything is Fireflies by Al Fitty. It's just the sappiest thing I think could ever be written. It's like I'm being force-fed Kool-Aid with ladybugs and glitter in it. I'm going to paraphrase, but it's like 10,000 lightning bugs get 10,000 panda hugs. I don't know who wrote it or how they did it. It's just the sappiest thing ever.
Fireflies. Well, let's listen to it.
You would not believe your eyes if 10 million fireflies lit up the world as I fell asleep.
Yeah, I think I might play some of that for my 3-year-old. That's a cute song. So it's the sappiness that gets you, Ian.
Yeah, and at the time it came out, I was working with a bunch of high schoolers, so it was just constantly on.
Yeah, sometimes it's the overexposure thing. Maybe you don't start out just despising a song, but sometimes it creeps up on you, doesn't it, Stephen?
Yeah, and sometimes like a song will go by a few dozen or hundred times, and then you start to pick apart the words, and you realize how stupid it is on top of everything else.
What is a song that you did that with? Can you think of one?
Oh, gosh. Well, I could say Fireflies by Owl City, since we just heard it. Though my reaction to Owl City is always, do you know Death Cab for Cutie?
Yeah.
Ben Gibbard from Death Cab for Cutie. Like, seriously, Owl City, I mean, I'm not the first person to acknowledge this, but when you started playing it, I'm like, oh, it's Ben Gibbard, except he's really annoying. So,
are you allowed to say these things?
Am I?
Yeah, I guess you're
like Owl City's thugs are going to come to our DC offices and like pull me out.
No, just as a benevolent booster of songs for NPR.
roughed up by Owl City's goons.
If they've got goons, I'm impressed. Yeah.
You know, if any band has goons, it should be Owl City. No, I mean, we certainly try to stay, you know, I maintain a very cheerful relationship with most music because I generally get to pick and choose the stuff that I listen to and you know, spend most of my time gravitating toward recommending stuff I love. And so I have enough positivity in my life that every once in a while I can vent my spleen.
Well, it's fun to do it, isn't it? And yeah, we asked the folks at WPR here, Wisconsin Public Radio, what some of their hot button songs were. And one that brought back, this is a memory one, and it is The Living Years by Mike and the Mechanics. And this is one that our contributor said always makes them cry because it makes me think of my father who passed away in 1996. Let's listen to a little of that one.
Every generation blames the one before, and all of their frustrations come beating on your door. I know that I'm a prisoner to all my father held so dear. I know that I'm a hostage to all
I just wish I could have told him in the living years.
That's another one from the 80s that has stuck around.
Yeah, and I have a very similar reaction to this song to what the listener had, and a fairly similar story to go with it. So
I bet a lot of people do.
Yeah, I mean, I actually remember, you know, I was obsessed with pop music when I was in high school, and I used to listen to American Top 40 and write down the top 40 in a spiral bound notebook every week. This was obviously before the internet. My parents, bless their hearts, bought me a Billboard magazine subscription when I was like 14, and I remember listening to the top 40 when this song was number one, and hearing it in the vicinity of my dad, and kind of heeding the advice of the song and having a really nice memory of that. And you know, my father died around the same time the listener's father died in the mid-90s. And so, yeah, I actually, you know, I know there are people who think that song is incredibly schmaltzy. I have, as you can probably tell from the way my voice is catching, the same connection to that song.
Yeah, I can imagine. But, you know, the nice thing about that song is that that song sounds like changed your life because you told your dad you loved him.
Well, yeah, and as you know, sappy as some of these songs are, or as cloying as they may be, or as bothersome as they may be to some people, you know, they often will contain a kernel that has some meaning to people. And it's why, as much as we all have songs where we shake our fist and, you know, oh, Meatloaf, I hate that guy. You know, like, there are tons of people who have an incredibly warm, loving reaction to Meatloaf. Maybe they bonded over their love of Meatloaf with a parent or a spouse or whatever. And so, you know, each one of these songs is a different experience for different people. So I hope people understand when I talk about despising a song that it's just because of you know how it connects with my own experiences.
Right. That's what's amazing, I guess, about music, is that everyone's reaction is so personal, and it's hard to say why. Like, I don't know what sort of mechanism in the brain sort of lights up at different songs for different people, but that's what makes it so interesting.
Yeah.
Well, let's take another phone call. We've got Jerry, who is joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Jerry.
Hello. I would just like to say a very interesting show. I studied music 35 years ago in college, and during criticism of the performing arts class, the professor hypothesized that he thought that each generation thinks that the best music is that which they grew up with during their younger years. So, like, you know, the kids think that the previous generation's music is not good, and et cetera, and et cetera. And the second point is that it's not whether what something sounds like that matters. It's the logic of its composition, whether it's good or bad. That was the 2 points I thought that were interesting.
Yeah, no, that is really interesting. I'd heard that too, Jerry. There's been some research that we bond with what we're hearing when we're teenagers, I guess because we're so hopped up on hormone soup and whatever, that the music just sounds better to us. I mean, I think that's why I like White Snake, which you think, you know, Chicago 18 is embarrassing. Try liking White Snake songs. I won't even download them now because I'm too embarrassed.
White Snake was at least cool at the time.
To some people.
Certainly at my age in central Wisconsin. Now, there was a really... I was just reading an article by Robert Krulwich on our science team at NPR about how our brains are wired that there's a stretch of time where we are most open to discovery, and I believe it's something like age like 18 to 23 or something like that. That's when we're most likely to experiment with different music, different foods, and you know what we have to be careful about when we get older is it's very easy for that to become cast in amber, and it gets harder and harder to try and discover new things, and we have to sort of train ourselves to keep discovering.
Right, and that's true, and that's a cliche of parents, right? That they're listening to the same songs they listened to when they were, you know, 20 years old.
Right.
And I feel like I'm starting to do that. So I've been trying to reach out, and so I'm not listening to White Snake at home and freaking my kids out, trying to find some new music to listen to. But it gets harder, doesn't it? I don't know. I feel like it does. Maybe it doesn't to you.
Well, this is why we have NPR Music. This is
right.
It really is. I mean, I'm not just plugging my thing. It's one of I think the purposes that we serve is we try to be sort of. I mean, I know it doesn't sound like I'm a non-judgmental person with all the slagging music I'm doing in this conversation, but we try to be a sort of non-judgmental guide to what we really like in music right now, that we're still constantly filtering all this music through our brains and picking out the best stuff and providing kind of a guided tour. Hey, you might like this. Hey, you might like this. You know, for people who are kind of who, you know, used to have more time to obsess over music and still love it.
Right. And it is. It takes time to do that, but it's definitely nice to have someone guide you through it. And we are talking this hour with Stephen Thompson, an editor and reviewer for NPR Music, where he curates Song of the Day, contributes to All Songs Considered, and co-created the Tiny Desk Concert Series. And we're trying to get at these songs this hour that really push our emotional buttons for better or worse, and also those songs that really encapsulate memories that we're going to have the rest of our life every time we hear that song. And we welcome your phone calls at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And our email address is talk@wpr.org. And we have an email here from Jim about how Scott Joplin saved his life. Once while driving on Little Sleep, I was bogged down in rush hour. I was also fighting a losing battle and falling asleep, but I couldn't pull over across several lanes of stopped traffic. And then The Cure came to me. I had a CD of Joshua Rifkin playing Scott Joplin rags very classically and a tempo. And in about 30 seconds, rather than nodding off, I was turned on and doing a little boogaloo right there in my seat. Thank you, Scott Joplin. So the power of music can keep us awake, get our toes tapping, and, you know, what about, is there music that you use like that, Stephen, to kind of, when you're in, like musical caffeine?
Musical caffeine. Well, you know, it's interesting. Sometimes, for me, I'm probably a little, I more need to be calmed down than lifted up. I think I'm just sort of wired that way. And so I often, there are certainly music that I listen to as musical caffeine. There's a guy named Andrew WK who makes these like gigantically overdriven kind of majestic anthems, you know, where he's got multiple songs with the word party in the name. And, you know, that's certainly, if you need, you know, if I need a kick, I'll put on something by Andrew WK. But what I often find is that I need a certain pieces of music that will center me, for lack of a better word, and kind of settle my jangled nerves and kind of cleanse my path. I'm just throwing metaphors like so much confetti, but
so many fireflies. Yeah.
So many fireflies.
Oh, hugging 10, pandas. 000.
Yes, hugging pandas with and throwing glitter at them. There's an album, and I don't know that we have any of their music queued up, but there's a record from a couple years ago called Diamond Mine by a Scottish musician named King Creosote, working with an electronic musician named John Hopkins. And it's about half an hour long record. It's all set in like the Scottish countryside, and it's these beautiful kind of folky electronic ballads about life in a Scottish seaside town. And it is the most transporting. I have never been to Scotland. I have never been to a Scottish seaside town, but it puts you in that incredibly lush green place that I often put that record on just to settle my nerves.
Well, we managed to find some, so let's take a listen.
Oh, beautiful.
Today John Taylor starts his month away on a boat 110 miles east of Aberdeen.
Is that it, Stephen?
Yep. And
I love that.
It brought my blood pressure down like 10 points in the like 8 seconds you played. And it actually brings in, I mean, that's a lovely spare portion of the record. But then there are all these beautiful, very subtle, organic kind of found sounds and samples and kind of whirring and clicking and little electronic bits and pieces. But it's all unbelievably warm. That is one of my favorite albums.
Yeah, I can see. Just from
Diamond
that sample.
Mine, it's called.
Diamond Mine. And wait, that's the name of the group or the album?
The album is called Diamond Mine. It's King Creosote and John Hopkins.
King Creosote and John Hopkins. Well, that's awesome. See, now we have something that I can download instead of Whitesnake. This is good already.
You can make a mashup. See if you can combine the two.
That would be gorgeous. Let's go back to our callers. Alex is joining us next from Milwaukee. Hi, Alex.
Hello.
Hey.
I have kind of an unusual experience, maybe. I was in the music business for a long time, started out costuming bands, and was a tour manager and a press liaison and a licensing agent for all different genres of music. And because I was in the business, it seemed like most of my friendships and my dating life were with musicians. And I found that if the relationship was good, whether it was a friendship or a romantic thing, then I seemed to overlook any flaws in their music. And if the person was a jerk, as in the case of Ted Nugent, I didn't like anything they did. And it turns out I was right about it. He was a jerk then, and he's a jerk now.
But I will
go back. Yeah, exactly. I think we all knew. But like with Queen, love everything they do because I was good friends with them. B.B. King, Clarence Gate, Miles Brown, love all these people. Ted Nugent, Jeff Beck, don't want to listen to anything in their catalog because of the personal relationship. And I think from other people I've talked to now that I'm out of the business, when they get a chance to meet a band that they really, really like, maybe they score backstage meet and greet tickets or whatever, if the band is nice to them, then they love them all the more. Mm. But if the band was kind of rude and dismissive, they don't want anything more to do with them, won't buy the music anymore, won't attend the concerts anymore, and it kind of triggers a bad thing for them.
Yeah.
When they hear it again.
Yeah, I can see that, because once you've got that personal association, it's hard, not just with music, but, you know, with books or actors. I kind of have that same thing.
Exactly.
What about you, Stephen?
It's something I actually have to watch out for quite a bit because I'm writing about music, and I try to retain as much objectivity as humanly possible. And yet, you know, you've mentioned a couple times that we do the Tiny Desk concerts, which are these video. It's a video podcast we do where our favorite bands come in and perform short concerts at our desks, and we record it. And, you know, and obviously that entails interacting with a band or musician for, you know, half an hour or whatever. And thankfully we have very, very, very few examples. I can't even think of any off the top of my head where I felt that person's a big jerk. But you often find like, oh my God, that person's so incredibly nice and engaging that, you have to set that aside when you're assessing a new piece of music, because it's very easy for, you know, I mean, I tend to have a selective memory and try to only think about positive stuff for the most part. But, you know, a musician who was incredibly warm and lovely to deal with at the Tiny Desk, it's very easy for that to color my view of all their music.
Yeah, I can see that. That would be hard. I'd ask you to share some of the names, but maybe we don't want to know.
Well, I mean, I can throw out names of people who are incredibly nice.
Yeah,
Mavis
who was
Staples.
Really nice?
Mavis Staples. Mike, she was like the mayor of our office from the moment she walked in. I mean, for the most part, I mean, the band Wilco.
Yeah.
Which I had always felt, I'd always gotten this sense of their public persona as being kind of a persnickety band.
Well, and they're kind of like a big deal, and sort of the bigger they are, it seems like the less personal they are with you.
Right, but at the same time, you know, sometimes the bigger they are, the more politesse they have, and kind of the more ability that, you know, they have to kind of flip a switch and be personable. And I, you know, I like to think that the setting of our office has something to do with it, where we try to make it a warm, comfortable place since bands are performing there, that bands come in and they know they're surrounded by people who are going to pay attention to their music. And so you know, we've thankfully can't even think of an example where I thought somebody was just a complete jerk. But there are actually so many instances of people who are incredibly gracious and kind that it's like I said, it's important to set that aside though when you're assessing a piece of music critically.
Maybe they're just nice to you because you're such a nice Wisconsin boy.
Well, you know, I like to think so. Well, and you know, plus I'm a pretty big deal.
Oh yeah, definitely. You throw your weight around some, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I want to tell one more story here that we got from Gabby on staff here. And her story, I love this story. She loves the song Somewhere Only We Know by Keane. And she says, on our first trip to Paris, I put it on repeat and fell asleep, in and out of sleep, on the 7 hours to the destination of my dreams. To this day, every time I hear the song, I flashback to that flight, to those first few hours of limbo during which Paris was a mystery and Europe was just a fairy tale. That's beautiful. Do you know that song?
I love that. I do. It's a very pretty kind of majestic. It's a good kind of the plane is touching down kind of ballad.
And I think we've got it here. Let's see if we can play a little bit. Again, that one is called Somewhere Only We Know.
Falling tree, I felt the branches, are they looking at me?
is Gabby's Paris song, Somewhere Only We Know. We're talking this hour with Stephen Thompson. He is an NPR guy. He does NPR music and curates Song of the Day, among a bunch of other things there, including the Tiny Desk concerts. And we're talking about the music that really flips your emotional switch this hour. For better or worse, we're hearing all sides of the coin there, and also those memories that we associate with songs for the rest of our lives. And we welcome your phone call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And you can also check in and say your piece on our Facebook page at The Veronica Rickard Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickard back with you today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And this hour we're hanging out with Stephen Thompson, an editor and reviewer for NPR Music, where he curates Song of the Day, among a whole bunch of other music-related stuff, including Tiny Desk concerts. And we're talking about the music that really flips our emotional switches this hour, and the potency that you can never shake off, no matter when you hear that song. And we'll go to our next caller. Jack is joining us from Neosho. Hi, Jack.
Hi. Yeah, I have a real love for the music that the Moody Blues composed and played all those years. And a song that really brings tears to my eyes is it's on the album A Question of Balance. It's the last song on the album. It's called The Balance. And it's a story about a man who comes to realize what it takes to be in balance with life. And he does this. He's lying under a tree and sees the beauty and the veins and the leaf and the light and the sky. And he starts talking about how he thinks about times when he was angry and hurt and frightened, and realizes that his life wasn't in balance. And he learns through this experience to be compassionate. The song is beautiful, lyrically and instrumentally. It just chokes me up every time I hear it.
It sounds like that's one of those songs that is the perfect marriage of music and words and meaning.
It really is.
Well, let's listen to a little.
Great.
After he had journeyed and his feet were sore, he was tired. He came upon an orange grove and he rested. And he lay in the cool while he rested.
A bit there of Jack's favorite Moody Blues song. Do you know that one, Stephen?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I have not been like super, super connected to the Moody Blues music over the years. I mean, I listened to some of their later stuff when it was out. But I mean, I think that what you were sort of saying about songs that kind of feed into your perspective on life a little bit, songs that kind of give you subtle pointers on ways to on a way to live. I mean, that's, you're getting so much more out of that than just a song.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing that one, Jack. And this is an email from Michelle who says, any suggestions for an antidote song for an earworm song? She's heard that Michael Jackson's Rock With You does it for some people. What do you think? If you want to get rid of another song, what song can you replace it with?
My answer to this is so cruel that I hesitate to do it. I always joke that when I have a song stuck in my head, I employ the "We Built This City" defense.
Oh no!
Which is where you just start singing the world's most singing a more annoying song. It's the nuclear option, sort of in hopes that it will just blast your brain.
Yeah, I don't know about that, Stephen.
Yeah.
You got to come up with something better. Oh, yes. And now you infected me. Thank you very much. We got to play something else. In fact, let's go to another caller who hopefully will have something else for us to listen to. Caroline from Arkdale. Let's see if we can get her on the line. You're up. Hi, Caroline.
Hi.
Hi.
And my memory is of the really old Beatles songs, such as I Want to Hold Your Hand, Help, and all that. And it brings back a memory of when I was in elementary school, and Wendy and I weren't supposed to be touching Chris's albums, but we would do it when Chris wasn't around, or her mom and dad, and that. And we would write down which direction each one of those albums were, what order they were, because we were sure Chris took note of whether she had A side closest to the window or B side, and I hear those and I automatically go back to elementary school with Wendy singing and dancing, and then of course having to carefully put those away because we didn't want to scratch.
I love it. Let's listen. Yeah, you can't go wrong with that song. Are there any Beatles songs that you can go really wrong with, Stephen?
Oh, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, there are different phases of the Beatles have different appeal to different people. I mean, I think what first popped into my head when she was talking about playing the Beatles, you know, with kids and everything is, you know, you were saying, Veronica, that music never really goes away, that you know, new songs come out all the time and they just add to this accumulation. And you know, what I've found with the Beatles is the Beatles are so, in addition to their songs just being these eternal, classic, wonderful songs, they're incredibly kid-friendly. And so I think, you know, for as much as, you know, you have your Whitesnake and I have my Chicago 18 and there were, you know, there was a caller talking about, you know, the Moody Blues and how that connected, or this, you know, the Beatles, I think, are kind of childhood. They're kind of childhood songs for each generation that comes on, you know, because they're one of the first things that parents will put on for their kids that everybody can enjoy.
Yeah, I totally have tons of Beatles memories from my childhood, and it's not my generation's music, you know, it's my mom's generation's music. But yeah, there is something we play them for our kids, so they're sort of evergreen, aren't they?
And it's nice to have certain artists who are for every generation, and where the music never feels, you know, you don't necessarily have a generation coming up like, oh, the Beatles, that's so played out. You know, because those songs,
right,
for the most part, those songs are timeless.
So do you see any corollaries to the Beatles now in the stuff that our generation is putting out there, or that people younger than us? I guess there are people younger than us now.
There are. I refuse to acknowledge this.
So do I. Darn it.
You're talking about equivalents?
Yeah. I mean, are there going to be classics like that coming out that next generations are going to play for their kids that are going to be just as evergreen as the Beatles are for us?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I certainly hope so. The thing is, though, that stuff kind of reveals itself over time. I mean, I think in terms of sound and in terms of, boy, you know, a band that jumps out, you know, and one that I was thinking about when I was thinking about songs that instantly transport me to happier places, I was thinking of the song Radiation Vibe by the band Fountains of Wayne.
Mm.
And if you know Fountains of Wayne, they had kind of a novelty hit in this song called Stacy's Mom. But they have a ton of these very rich, catchy, timeless, you know, there's a little bit of kind of pop culture references to them that might not age as well. But, you know, in terms of current bands, you know, and they've been around for a while, but I think about current bands where future generations could latch onto them as pop classics. That's one that jumps out.
Fountains of Wayne. And what was the name of the song again?
Radiation Vibe.
Radiation Vibe. See, I love this. That's something else I can download now.
Yeah, and it's just this wonderful top-down kind of, oh, perfect pop song.
So we've talked a little bit about how songs don't die, but if you could retire one song, and, you know, you said Meatloaf, but I mean, forever and ever, and it was just gone, what song would you retire?
Wow. You know, that's, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. You know, I feel like I would want to crowdsource a perfect answer to that in order to remove a burden from the greatest number of people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very tempting, right, to pick like a current terrible song, or even a current song that a lot of people love that I just can't hear anymore, like I'm Yours by Jason Mraz. Do you know that song?
I've heard it. It's
very sing-songy. You talk about a song that you when it gets stuck in your head, you want to remove it with like an ice cream scoop. You know, it's not even a hit anymore, so it doesn't get played. But like, I don't know, I would probably try
will.
To find a song.
You'll be at a drugstore and it will get played. Yeah,
that's true. I mean, I don't want to. I know a lot of people love "I'm Yours," and I don't want to remove that lovely memory. I would say "Pretty Fly for a White Guy" by The Offspring.
Ah, wait. Do you mean? Let's see. Do we have that one?
Oh,
I think
God.
We do. That's a generational one too, and that's what, from the 80s.
That's 90s. That's
90s.
Late 90s, I think.
And it is track 11, I think, on our list here. And we're looking forward to torment you with, Stephen.
I'm going to pull my headphones away from my head.
You're getting some reprieves here, huh? What do you hate about that song?
It's a little bit of what I don't like about the Meatloaf stuff. It's songs that are shrill and repetitive and think they're very clever.
Here it is.
And all the girls say I'm pretty fly.
I love your suffering. Your suffering groans in the background.
I know there are people in this world who actually suffer, and that this is just hating a song is toy suffering. It's pretend
right.
suffering.
Right.
So I don't want to get carried away in my despair. It's not working in the mines.
I don't know. I think there's some real suffering there. I think so. All right, let's go to one more caller. Siegfried is joining us from Racine. Hi, Siegfried.
Good morning.
Morning.
When I was in college, my roommates, I had a girlfriend and my roommates, every time they came home and I played anything from Leonard Cohen, they said, oh, God, they had another fight, they broke up. Well, anything, So Long, Marion, Bird on a Wire, The Stranger Song. Well, to make a long story short, on Sunday we're celebrating our 40th wedding anniversary.
Aww.
And oh, irony of ironies. The theme song for our 40th wedding anniversary is going to be one of Leonard Cohen's latest, Dance Me to the End of Love.
Oh, so well, congratulations.
We raised three kids and we stayed 40 years of marriage with Leonard Cohen.
It's all thanks to Leonard Cohen.
For somebody who writes depressing music, that's a hell of a thing to say.
I think we've got... Let's listen to that one.
Dance me to your beauty with a burning violin. Dance me through the panic. Till I'm gathered safely.
Now that is a good song.
Yeah, you're celebrating your love with one of the greatest lyricists in music
right.
in popular music history.
No, pretty good taste, you guys. Maybe that's why you stayed together.
Yeah.
All right, well, happy anniversary to you. Appreciate that. And so we've talked about, you know, some of the fun ones. I want to do another one from a staffer. Christopher said that the song Hurt by Johnny Cash... Really?
Oh, yeah, this is a fun one.
Did I say fun? The opposite of fun. Right, the opposite of fun. We're going to go to the other end of the spectrum to go along with your size of suffering earlier, Stephen. This one literally made Christopher cry. It has powerful lyrics. It's that deep baritone voice. What do you think of when you hear the song, Stephen?
Oh, this is Johnny Cash covering Nine Inch Nails' Hurt. Wow. I mean, Johnny Cash late in his life just released a string of songs that were very much about sort of mortality with dignity, that were very, yeah, I mean, they're very, very emotional. And this song is just this giant of an artist, you know, just one of my favorite artists of all time, and him just sort of, you know, getting old and his voice is deteriorating, but he still sings with this incredible gravitas and dignity. I have the same reaction to his late period records.
Everyone I know goes away in the year, and you could have it all. My empire.
Yeah, that one is definitely powerful, isn't it?
It also brings out the power in songs that people don't always think of as having lyrical power. I mean, the original song is Nine Inch Nails. It's a completely different arrangement, and you realize, like, oh, when Trent Reznor wrote that song, Trent Reznor didn't just write this big, you know, loud, aggressive, whatever song. There's really substance to it.
And I want to go out on the song that you love. We're not going to make you listen to Meatloaf again, Stephen, but Walking on Sunshine, we can leave on that one. I think that's a beautiful one to end on. And it has been a real pleasure talking about this with you today. It's been a blast.
Oh, it's been a blast for me, too. Thank you.
Stephen Thompson, an editor and reviewer for NPR Music, where he curates Song of the Day, contributes to All Songs Considered, and he co-created the Tiny Desk Concert Series. Thanks to Marika Suval for producing this one, Jennifer Dargan for answering your calls this morning, Dave Potras for doing our technical direction, and Rob Ferret for on the fly finding some of the songs that you brought up for us today. We appreciate that, and happy listening. I'm Veronica Rickert on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.